All right. We'll call this meeting of the Law and Legislation Committee to order. Will the clerk please call the roll to establish a quorum?
Thank you. Councilmember Guerra?
Here.
Councilmember Kaplan? Here. We expect Councilmember Jennings momentarily.
Oh, there he
is. Councilmember Jennings?
Here.
And Chair Valenzuela?
I am here. Okay, since you all just walked in, Councilmember Kaplan, can I ask you to please do the land acknowledgement and the Pledge of Allegiance?
We are rising for the opening acknowledgement in honor of Sacramento's indigenous people and tribal lands. To the original people of this land, the Nisenan people, the Southern Maidu, the Valley and Plains Miwok, the Putwin-Wintun peoples, and the peoples of the Wilton Rancheria, Sacramento's only federally recognized tribe. May we acknowledge and honor the Native people who came before us and still walk beside us today on these ancestral lands by choosing to gather together today in the active practice of acknowledgement and appreciation for Sacramento's indigenous people's history, contributions, and lives. Thank you, and remain standing and turn and pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Excellent. Thank you, Councilmember. I think you're only the second person that I've heard pronounce all those names correctly. So kudos to you for studying the phonetic sheet. All right. So we'll dig into our agenda here. And I want to remind anybody in the audience, if you'd like to give public comment, you can submit forms that are in the back of the room to the clerk. We will stop taking comment cards once we take the first commenter. And if you're online in the Zoom, just raise your hand when the item begins and we will call on you after we call on those in the audience. So with that, we will start with our consent calendar. We have two items, the minutes and our log. Does anybody have any questions or comments about items on consent calendar?
I am good.
All right. Oh, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you. I want to talk about the log a little bit. If my notes are correct, in looking at the log, there are 11 of the 22 items that are on there prior to 2022. There are items that are on there from council members who are no longer on the council from 2018. And it is items on there from 2019 as well. And in an effort to clean up the log, we created a new process that I feel like we should go take these items and go back through that process and see if they're still relevant today. And so I just wanted to kind of put that on the table, because if it's on there since 2018, we're now in 2023.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think, it's funny that you asked that question, because I emailed our clerk this weekend because I woke up on Saturday morning and went, wait a minute, what happens to the items that were already on the log? And so what I know the clerk is doing, and I don't know if you or Consuela want to talk about, is they're going through the log, because obviously some of these items staff are working on, they're just taking time. Like a lot of the cannabis items, for instance, they're kind of bundled under. So are there things that staff's already saying, hey, we're already in process on this, it may have taken us some time, but we don't want to stop? Or are there things that, yeah, we just haven't started at all that we want to wipe clean and say, hey, if you still want this, submit the proposal and we'll start again? So
there are some things that are on there that we've already accomplished, yeah, and yet they're still on the log. So I think there's a cleanup process that needs to happen, just so that we don't overwork staff, have them working in areas that they shouldn't be working, that are not the priority of this commission. So committee. So anyway, that would be my request, is to send it through the process again, go back to the original author in an attempt to clean up the log and make sure there are only things that are on there that we want staff to be working on, okay, and that we want to be talking about.
Yeah, so I'll ask, I know Consuelo, I know I've been pestered a couple times about things that are pending on the log, about do you still want this on the log? So, I think Consuelo and the clerk, our staff and clerk, can maybe confer and circle back to us maybe on the next meeting agenda. We can talk about, hey, these are things we're already working on, they're in process, we don't need to remove anything versus things that we might need to resubmit. All right. Cool. All right. And then we'll be doing that more broadly as an entire council, which should be fun, because I was like, wait, I had these three things on the log at council. What does this mean? Probably going to have to resubmit it through our new process, which we just did our first one today. It's very easy. Thank you for sending out those forms, Madam Clerk. That's been really helpful. All right, so without any other comments on the consent calendar, can I please have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second. Great, motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions or noes? All right, that passes unanimously. So we will move on to our discussion calendar, item 3, the long-awaited outdoor interactive digital media display item. And I see our planning staff here in the audience. I'm not sure who's taking lead on this, but we'll pass the microphone over to you. Hello. You've been coming to our meetings a lot lately, Kevin. This has been fun.
Good afternoon, Chair and Committee members. My name is Jamie Mosler, and I'm an Associate Planner in the Community Development Department. I'm also joined by Madeline Labosco, who is our Consultant Researcher at Third Plateau, who's joined via Zoom, and will be giving today's presentation on digital kiosks. So an overview of today's presentation, I'll provide just context on what a digital kiosk is, background on previous committee meetings, along with a status update of where we are now in the process. Then Madeline will share findings from the landscape report and their research, and then I'll provide us with our next steps after that. So a digital kiosk is an electronic device, resembles a large mobile phone, and has some features that are shown on the screen, from wayfinding to commercial advertising. There have been three previous committee meetings on this topic. It was first added to the committee log in August of 2020. Then in December of 2021, staff shared the code amendments needed to allow for these kiosks. The committee also requested additional information. And then in November of last year, staff shared a status update that a consultant had been selected, in this case it's Third Plateau, to support staff with those questions in two phases: phase one, best practices research, and phase two, community outreach. So where are we at now with those phases? We've completed phase one, our best practices research. Third Plateau prepared a landscape report with background, key findings, best practices, considerations, along with case study cities, which Madeline will touch on in a moment. And then we're currently in the process of phase two, our community outreach. We've been hosting virtual focus group meetings with neighborhood associations and economic development groups. We've also been conducting one-on-one stakeholder interviews, and there's a community survey open right now through Friday for broader community feedback. And then we also have our city meetings as well. I will now turn it over to Madeline Labosco, researcher from Third Plateau, who is participating via Zoom to share her screen and some findings from the report.
Thank you, Jamie, and thank you, Chair and Committee members, for having me today. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen for some additional slides. As Jamie mentioned, we've been working closely with the city to conduct this research on digital kiosks and wanted to provide some high-level findings from our first phase, the best practices phase of research so far, as well as a quick update of where we're at with phase two. So just to ground us in shared understanding, as Jamie mentioned, digital kiosks, sometimes also known as interactive kiosks, really refer to platforms that share information and services predominantly to pedestrians. So as you can see here in this image, there's a variety of types of kiosks. They often look quite different. The one on the far left here is a kiosk in neighboring Berkeley, California. The one in the center here is a kiosk in Kansas City, which was an early adopter of kiosks back in 2016. And then on the right, we see another kiosk in neighboring Elk Grove. As you can see, they look quite different, and these certainly are not the only types of kiosks. As Jamie mentioned, some look like a large mobile phone or iPad with an LED interactive screen. Other ones, like the one on the left, are actually solar powered and have more of an e-ink or Kindle type screen, and often use QR codes to kind of interact there. So just want to give us a shared understanding of exactly what we're talking about when we talk about kiosks, because we know kiosks often are in airports and fast food restaurants and run the gamut. But here's what we're talking about today. To kind of building off of what Jamie shared, just wanted to share some context. As she mentioned, we have a two-phase approach, and we'll be sharing our findings from phase one, where we looked at best practices across the field and also looked at other cities' approaches. When we looked at other cities' approaches, we actually developed 5 case studies exploring both cities that have implemented digital kiosks as well as those that have considered but not yet implemented. And at a high level, there's more information in the landscape report, but we looked at Atlanta, Berkeley, Kansas City, Raleigh, and Sacramento. For context, Atlanta, Berkeley, and Kansas City have implemented kiosks. Raleigh has looked at this for a number of years and is moving toward implementing as of recently, but does not currently have kiosks. And similarly, obviously, we're talking about kiosks today in Sacramento, which the city has looked at several times before, including a smart city initiative in 2017, but has yet to implement kiosks as well. As Jamie mentioned, right now, we're also in the midst of our second phase where we're conducting the community outreach and engagement she described. So we're getting some great feedback there as well. Here's just a quick overview of potential features that came up in our initial research for the kiosks. This is certainly not an exhaustive list of kiosk features, but gives you an idea of the types of services and features that kiosks offer. Originally, kiosks were often marketed as a wayfinding tool, but increasingly so have also been used as a digital inclusion tool, offering Wi-Fi and other resources. And we'll get into a little bit of what these features do and how proponents of kiosks tout them, and how those who might not be in favor of kiosks find some of them concerning as well in our key findings in a moment. When we looked across our research, we found five main areas that folks often kind of tout as benefits to a community for kiosks. The first one being community messaging. So instead of flyers, this kiosk offers a way to share information with folks who might not have access to the city's website or regularly access social media accounts, but to share information about city events, city programs, whether that's parks and recreation, city jobs, kind of runs the gamut, but really a way to share messages with the community. There's also, as I mentioned, an increasing use of kiosks as part of digital inclusion efforts. Some cities are increasingly prioritizing equity in digital kiosk programs through strategic placement and specific features. Offering Wi-Fi access, for example, can be really beneficial in that realm, and also having information about other technology programs, whether those be at schools, local libraries, that sort of thing. We've seen this particularly in our case studies in Atlanta, that had a concerted effort for 25% of their kiosks to be located in underserved areas with low broadband internet access. Houston and New York City have also made some strategic placement decisions with their Wi-Fi enabled kiosks that came up in the research as well. Additionally, some advocates say there's an economic development element to kiosks, where kiosks can actually help make information accessible to visitors or folks that might be in a new neighborhood, providing restaurant business directories. We talked to folks at Berkeley, actually their most used feature was their business and restaurant directories. And they shared that sometimes it helps provide information outside of the search engine algorithm. Additionally, there's a public safety component to some kiosks. As we talked about earlier, features certainly vary, but a number of kiosks are able to display certain notifications and messages that can include alerts related to amber alerts, fire or air quality. Several kiosks also offer a call button that will enable folks to actually connect with emergency services. And last but not least, there's certainly a transportation and wayfinding angle as well. A number of cities have their kiosks integrated with public transportation. For example, Kansas City kiosks line their streetcar line. There's a similar approach in Milwaukee, and these kiosks often provide real-time public transit information. Kiosks also have maps, direction, navigation tools, and sometimes these tools, folks who are using the kiosk can actually continue to use with a related mobile app as well. In our research, we wanted to also, of course, look at issues that were giving people pause with kiosks. And one of the main areas that came up was the issue surrounding privacy. A number of cities and communities had privacy as pretty big parts of their conversation when considering kiosks. Berkeley, for example, the community raised a lot of concerns around cameras as a kiosk feature, as well as pedestrian counters and some concerns related to perceived surveillance. And Berkeley actually amended its agreement with the kiosk manufacturer and does not currently include cameras as a feature, while many other cities do. Similarly, Detroit also implemented kiosks without cameras and has an agreement that's very intentional and conscious of data privacy and data collection rules. And that looks different from agreement to agreement, but a number of cities have been quite responsive. Additionally, cities like Seattle looked into kiosks, but data privacy and collection were quite a concern, and that was one of several reasons that they did not pursue moving forward with the kiosk program. Another area that was explored in the research was the cost of kiosks and related issues with advertisements. Increasingly, a number of kiosk programs are actually run at low or no cost to a city because of advertisements and revenue sharing agreements with kiosk manufacturers and sometimes partner organizations, such as tourism boards or local economic development organizations. On the other hand, a number of cities do own and manage their kiosks using city funds or grant funds. It varies certainly across the field, but a number of public members of the public had some concerns around the cost of kiosks and if that cost is perhaps offset by advertisements. Several groups in a number of cities raised concerns about advertisements and a perceived kind of time squareification of their respective cities and concerns related to light pollution or not wanting national advertisements in front of local businesses and related concerns. Additionally, there are some limitations where kiosks can be located. This again varies, of course, city to city and with specific kiosk types. But as we talked about earlier, there are both kiosks that run on electricity and solar-powered kiosks. With electricity, proximity to power and access to power can be a challenge. Berkeley noted that this was a challenge for them in particular. And with solar kiosks, while you don't need necessarily the same access to power, there can be some limitations for where there are suitable locations. Additionally, as we kind of began our community engagement, we've heard from the community some fears about vandalism and street clutter and accessibility with respect to location limitations as well. So certainly a lot to continue to explore there, but we just wanted to share this at a high level from what we've heard from our best practice, what we've heard and seen from our best practices research so far. And I will turn it over to Jamie to continue with next steps.
Perfect. Thanks, Madeline. So our next steps, sorry, it's the next slide. All right, so next steps, as I mentioned, our community outreach is still going on. We have a community survey open for broader feedback. The link for it is on the screen. And to summarize, there's no action required on today's item. It's receive and comment only. But staff will return in the spring after outreach is complete with a draft ordinance for the Law and Legislation Committee to see. And we are available for any questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jamie and Madeline and Kevin, who's here for backup. We appreciate that. I know this was sponsored by Councilmember Garrett, but before we do that, maybe we should take any public comment that is available. So, Madam Clerk, do we have any comments on this item?
Chair, I have no speakers in chambers or online.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. All right, Councilmember Garrett.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, let me thank the staff for this this work and this thorough work. This kind of came about... in 2019, and then we finally got it to council in 2020 when we've been looking at ways of how do we refocus and re-energize some of our commercial corridors. You know, obviously many cities in the downtown areas, they've used this because there's a lot of walkability, and even today thinking about like all the FFAers that are walking around, or this last week with March Madness. I mean, you know, wayfinding, and if you're new in a new city, and yeah, you can go through the craziness of Googling something, but there's a lot, you know, that you have all of a sudden, whereas a kiosk can kind of focus in on a particular area. And I think there's that kind of benefit. And when we first started discussing this, and how can we look at bringing some energy and livelihood and creating more walkable spaces and in areas like Stockton Boulevard or other areas like Del Paso Boulevard and Franklin Boulevard, we've talked to them about it. And also the diversity of restaurants. I was intrigued in the staff report, the discussion about how Berkeley has used it. And I know in my own council district, if it was easy to look at something visually versus when you just go on to Google something, if you could easily see that, hey, you know, the diversity of restaurants or not only that, but services that are provided in that area could help when someone's visiting. And we've had this discussion also with Visit Sacramento in our Visitors Bureau, where the Sacramento Chinese of Indochina Neighborhood Association, their temple, they want to see more visitors come in, not just visitors who are there coming to worship, but they are very proudful about the history that many of the refugees have had, but yet it's you know, just one not even a block, but one one parcel away from the boulevard. A wayfinder could help, you know, also encourage folks, say, hey, there's a destination point here that some of the community is interested in, saying, how do we look and recognize a historical mark here? I know I've heard personally, at least from the PBID, about, you know, the benefits of also the cameras, at least on the corridor, on the business corridor. Maybe in the areas where I think there's residents and housing, we should be very thoughtful about that. But I know for them, the fact that I know in now our police department, we're having challenges adding more pod cameras, figuring out, are there tools for this? The other piece that I found very exciting, particularly when we were trying to look at how do we include air monitoring in South Sacramento and in these area and commercial corridors, how do we use these tools to also provide those resources? And then finally, what I do see is exciting is in many of these areas where they can be also equipped with looking at places of public charging. And so figuring out how we, look at reducing our overall, cost, making it way for us to have more public charging spaces. The one that I think that I don't sit on RT, but I found interesting in the report and how some cities have used it, is in their bus stops, where they can be used to see where your bus actually is and how much time, and provide some level of confidence. And, hey, if I'm going to get off at this bus stop, I can actually also see, what's around that area as well. So I think there's a lot of benefits here that I'm excited to move forward and to see where the community response is. But more interestingly, I'd like to figure out how we get to the point where maybe working with the PBIDs, there is a way that the city works with the PBIDs to do I don't know if it's a franchise agreement or some kind of contract agreement, so that they're in areas where they make sense, to be able to use this as on all of those tools. And again, most of this, I think, falls in line with where the public property is, where the right-of-way questions are. It might incentivize it also in the private property area. So in plazas, unfortunately, I think when I think about our commercial corridors, many of them were designed in ways where the plazas are way further back and there's a huge parking lot in between walkways. So figuring out, okay, maybe this, the move starting in the public right-of-way might also help attract people to come to inside the plazas and being able to help move economic activity there. So to me, I think that's kind of where I think there's some positive areas to look at. I'll speak for my district specifically, but I do think that in areas, particularly with 51, we're looking at potentially a BRT system going there and figuring out how all of these interconnect. It's a positive one. So I'd like to, again, I know this is for an update of where we're at, but I would like to see staff move forward in how we look at how would it be managed as a franchise agreement. Again, the first time we tried this, it was with only one contractor and vendor, Verizon, as part of a bigger city plan, and obviously there were much more complicated factors on where that program ended with that one provider that had very little to do with this, but more to do with the other agreement. But I do think it started us in the conversation of, are there other opportunities for us to make this as a tool to bring life and energy into some of our corridors, and also specifically, I think, to support businesses that probably don't have the same level of advertisement and capital as some of larger chains in the area. So let me stop there, Madam Chair, to say that I support moving forward in this direction, and I know we're still doing the community outreach, but specifically working, I think I'd like to see how we actually move forward to executing some kind of franchise agreement or something where it's maybe with the PBIDs, and I probably would move away from the city trying to manage something like this. That's probably not where my interest is. I like the low cost and no cost options where the franchise agreements kind of cover their costs and the capital costs and maintenance requirements. And I think all those can be spelled out in some kind of MOU or agreement with whatever happens. And I think there's enough examples there moving forward. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thank you. Councilmember Kaplan.
Thank you. I'm coming into this in the middle because I know the city has had many conversations, but I want to thank staff and the consultant for the case examples. That helped me understand what's being done in other jurisdictions and things to look at. You know, I think what's really important, well, I don't have any PBIDs in District 1, so each area is a little different. I would like to see this move forward, but as we do it, be mindful of kind of like the best practices. I think it's great for potentially PBIDs, but like my district, where's a high traffic area that might benefit? Like probably it would be around like our library and ARC and Intercom, you know, which has like a book as well where people are coming, or, you know, near more the regional park where people might come in and use that. I really like how Atlanta kind of set this up. I'm not interested. I saw that Berkeley did like a 15-year contract. I can tell you I'm not, that's a little ambitious, because I think we have to see an accountability, and we know technology is ever changing, so I don't think it's in the best interest of the city to lock us in for a long time knowing how things change. If we do move forward, I'd like to also look at this of being very transparent. How do we do an RFP? And going out and getting bids, while there may only be a couple of vendors, I think we should be as transparent as possible. I can tell you a couple of features I'm really not interested in. I don't think it's smart necessarily for games. You know, I'm not sure that that's the best use, but I love the thought also. Sacramento, we have air quality issues. You know, I think this should definitely, we should look at digital inclusion in our areas that may have, you know, not as many trees. Air quality may be different there versus an area that has a lot of trees. And having that integrated into, you know, our air quality, our bus systems, be able to track. I love that considering looking at in certain areas, maybe there are historical features that get loaded in, because this is also a tourist thing. And then I'm a 50-50 on the cameras. I believe in privacy and not collecting data, but are there some areas where maybe a camera is a beneficial public safety item versus other areas that it could be potentially perceived as a kind of an invasion? On the advertisement, I would like it to be limited to maybe what's already existing within city rules, procedures, and codes. You know, I want to be very mindful that when things were part of this, of what gets advertised. So if we move forward, what are limitations? What are the parameters on that? And then also just best practices on locations. I look forward to hearing a little bit more as you come back from what happened in the survey and the concerns are. But also, like, where's best practices and locations? What have other jurisdictions learned for that as we look at that? But I'm very appreciative. Thank you for all the time and effort. I think it's something we should definitely look into and move forward on, but just be mindful of the ever-changing landscape of technology.
Great points. Moving on to Vice Chair Jennings.
I'll be brief because my colleagues have said everything that I want to say. But I want to support the comment on the advertisement that the majority of the information, majority of the content should be information as opposed to advertisement. You don't want these things bombarded with advertisement, even though I understand that sometimes it pays the bill. But we want more information. I know I do. I want more information as opposed to paid advertisement. So that's one point I just wanted to kind of support on as well. I'm really happy with the whole concept of the best practices research and coming back to us with all the information on the best practices that are going on throughout the whole city. So this can become a learning process for us as we start making plans to bring it to Sacramento. Ultimately, it's going to come to Sacramento. Sacramento is growing and moving at a fast pace, and we have to keep up. When we went to the NCAA games on the 16th and the 18th, there were thousands of people who were looking for places to eat, who were looking for what was in that immediate area that they could take advantage of with their families that were looking for history museums and other things that they could do in the city of Sacramento. So that, therefore, brings a lot of benefit to us. But the best practices research will tell us what other cities have told, have said, as far as what really is working in those cities. And we should really pay attention to all those cities that are out there. I really appreciate the community outreach in April and the fact that we're on a short timeline to come back to Law and Ledge in the spring. And so these are steps I think are important steps to move forward so we can move forward together to make Sacramento the big city it is and not what Phil Jackson called us. I won't even say what he called us, but it had something to do with being a country city, mm-hmm. which we are no more. So anyway, I just want to say good job to staff and the work that you're doing to bring this forward.
Yeah, we are the best city to live in California, and people better not forget it. These are amazing comments, and I know you're up as, again, Vice Mayor. So I just I want to concur with a lot of the comments that were raised. I love the idea of schools, libraries, parks, especially in areas that don't have super concentrated. Think about Colonial Heights or even Land Park when you go next to the zoo. It's like, how do we help show people? That's not going to necessarily be like, oh, I'm walking here from another neighborhood, but I'll see and learn something new. Personally, I'm really interested in the e-vehicle charging. I know our Active Transportation Commission has waited on this for like the scooters and the e-bikes, because now that the state's shifting their vouchers to not just cover vehicles, but also these alternative things. It's like, hey, where are we going to charge that if I like come in from, you know, Natomas or somewhere and I'm coming to see a show? How do I make sure that I have a charge when I leave? That's really exciting. And I know some of our commissioners have reached out to express their excitement for that possibility. Could also be a revenue generating opportunity, right? So there's a lot of ways to think about revenue generation here. My personal interest has always been in an emergency broadcast in language that my nightmare scenario was always if there was a flood, if something catastrophic did happen, how would the Cantonese speakers in Southside Park know where to go. And if we had something that they knew, it's like we could just teach people, hey, go, like these things will show you. You also have a designated evac point. I know some cities have done that where it's like, go here. You're not only going to get information, but that's where we're going to come to be like, hey, we're picking you up. We're getting you out. This is the evacuation point. So we could really think about this with our emergency management team as well. And yeah, I did not escape me the amazing transit examples in the study, because I was like, ooh, there's lots of great things. And RTU is really good at a lot of things, and one of the things we are really good at is writing grants and being really cool and competitive when it comes to federal funding. So it does make me wonder about this. I will say I do have concerns about the cameras, and I know my privacy and surveillance ordinance, I actually got some draft resolution language from Baltimore and Berkeley, and so I was going to bring that forward as a separate proposal to say, let's talk about this, because I think obviously there is a safety security issue, but we want to make sure we're governing the use of that well, especially because one of the flags that I put in my notes in like bold text here was the cybersecurity risk flag that the consultant put in there, that this is more distributed infrastructure, and how do we make sure that somebody isn't using this to collect people's information or to do things that we wouldn't want them to do. But the people counting part of this, which is totally separate, that's just a sensor, like how many times is somebody walking by, that's really cool. Because I know when downtown started showing that for us, it helped us really see where are the corridors that folks are using, where are the corridors they're not using, so we kind of could think more strategically about how to invest and make those more activated. But I love, as the vice chair just said, I love the full research. I love seeing all the things. I can't wait to see all the feedback you're going to get. But I also think when you come back to us, and I'd love to get the vice mayor's feedback, I'd love to get your all's feedback too on what you think would work, because obviously you've now looked at this, you're seeing what other cities are doing, you're seeing how things are changing, what might work for us based on our unique sidewalk and infrastructure. I'd love when you come back to say, hey, you know what, like I think solar power is great, but you might be like, you know, when we look at our corridors, there really aren't a lot of good locations for that, and it's going to have to be electrical install, and that's going to limit the locations even further, just to get a little bit more of your take and your lens on this great research that Third Plateau is helping us put together. So that we can maybe move the ball a little further faster. But Vice Mayor seems excited about that. So with that, I'll let you have the last word, Vice Mayor, before we move on to the next item.
No, I think you made some amazing points there. And one of them, I didn't punch up for this reason, but, you know, understanding where people are moving, and we're thinking about where, you know, putting, you know, crosswalks and infrastructure for us to cross, it's so expensive. And so having us understand what's best for folks, I mean, that to me is like the data that would help us and say, look, you know what? There's a natural interest in people moving this direction. Let's figure out, you know, where we can do that. Or if people aren't going in this direction, what is it? Councilmember Kaplan and I were walking down J Street in one section. I'm like, this is kind of a sketchy part to be walking by. So, you know, and maybe people are avoiding that and doing a big loop. And so understanding those, I think, is important. But the reason I punched up was, you know, and yes, I agree with the concern of on the commercial side of it, advertising, and it does sometimes is a necessary activity to pay the bills. And I know we focus sometimes on making sure that the maintenance is taken care of and the you know operations taken care of, but I also don't want to lose sight of if there is an opportunity to make sure that there is a neighborhood impact for it. So if, you know, is there kind of a cost sharing or revenue sharing with that local community to be able to support their efforts? Is there, you know, nonprofit or youth program that helps in that cost sharing? I want to make sure that's not forgotten. That's, hey, look, you know, obviously there's ups and downs advertising market, as we know it from just the agreements that the city already has. But I think it's important that there's also a component for those areas in the neighborhood. So I forgot to mention that because I saw that was part of the revenue agreements and the cost sharing is important. But I also want to make sure when we look at this, can there be support for, say, I'm throwing it out there, the Fruit Ridge Neighborhood Association, right? That they've always had a challenging issue of capacity building, but they want to do good things like the national night out stuff. So I want to figure out how we support that effort too. If the, you know, again, you throw everything at it, the Christmas tree, you don't want it to fall over. But I think it's exciting that we're figuring out a new tool that could be helpful. And then, you know, for any of us that have a lot of constituents who use scooters, ride shares, or bikes, we need places where people can connect and charge up out of the sidewalk way. I think those are key places. So, but yeah, I didn't want to make sure that staff didn't lose sight that looking at the revenue sharing for community needs as well. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think we're learning that, like, I just got my briefing on the regional bike share program stuff, right, that a lot of you have been on, say, COG for a while, have been working on for many, many years, and, you know, thinking about that ongoing maintenance, thinking about, like, where do the costs for this come from, and it does get so complicated between, you know, we don't want our streets just full of whatever ad can pay the buck, but we also want these cool things for our communities, so the balance will be huge. I don't know if we made it more narrow or more broad for you all, staff. But I know the vice chair punched his hand up again. So if you want to go ahead, or did you mean to?
Just very quickly, I was noticing some of the cities that we're looking at, and I thought about Berkeley being 90 minutes away. Mm-hmm. And if that's the closest city to us, we could very easily get in a van and drive down to Berkeley. See how Berkeley is doing, what they're doing, talk to some of their council members about how this has benefited the city. We've got a road trip 90 minutes away. I'd be willing to buy barbecue on the way back.
So, I know, we have a second and a third for a road trip. I think that would be
I just want to kind of put it on the table.
Although I'm sure the city attorney's office is like, wait, y'all can't get in a van together. So, yes, do it forever. We'll drive separately next to each other. No, I'm kidding. Take the train. No, that's a great idea. And I couldn't agree more getting that input from, because one of the things I think, you know, I see these screens and I'm like, oh man, how often do those things get broken and then have to get replaced? But I'm sure the technology has evolved that maybe they're like, oh no, that's been fine. You know, we actually haven't had to pay as much as we thought we would. I don't know. But staff, do you have any other follow up for us, or did we sufficiently expand the scope of your perspective on this?
I'm clear on the comments and the questions and the follow up. The Shattuck BART station, there's a kiosk right next to that if you go.
Yeah. There we go. Take transit. I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for this. This is a really exciting item. Lots of potential, lots of intersections with all of the goals. So keep it at it, Vice Mayor. This will come back. All right. Thank you all. We'll move on now to our fourth and final agenda item, an update on the noise ordinance. Some of you may recall we heard this just at our last meeting. We were hoping to come back this meeting with the ordinance language. We've had a slight delay, which is not at all due to anything bad. I think it's actually good that staff's been working it over this hard. But I want to give the team here, Angel and Peter, a chance to give an update. I know we've got at least one person here to give public comment on behalf of one of our healthcare organizations. So Staff, why don't you take it away?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Council members. I'm Angel Solis with the City Attorney's Office. With me is Peter Lemos, the Housing and Enforcement Chief of the Community Development Department. We are here because we would like to provide an update regarding the ordinance amending certain provisions of Chapter 8.68. The language of the ordinance amending Chapter 8.68 has been drafted after quite a few revisions and multiple dork sessions. And most of those sessions aimed at narrowly tailoring, as was requested by Councilmember Kaplan. The language or the proposed language, now the City Attorney's Office in conjunction with the Community Development Department are finalizing the accompanying staff report and materials to accurately detail and reflect the amendments. That should be completed shortly, and CDD and CAO will bring forth the proposed ordinance on April 4th of 2023.
And that's two law and legislation, or two council?
Two law and legislation, back to the committee, sorry. My apologies.
A little bit, you got it. Because I know we heard loud and clear from the committee at the last meeting that we want to see the ordinance before it moves to council, even if it's quick, so it is a delay, because we only meet every couple of weeks, but the sense of urgency I don't think is lost on any of us. I do want to take public comment maybe before we go to council comments. Is that okay?
Yes, of course.
You too. Yeah, Madam Clerk? Yeah. Sorry.
I have one speaker in chambers, Candelaria Vargas.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me today. My name is Candelaria Vargas. I am the Director of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood Advocates, Marmonte, C-A-N-D-E-L-A-R-I-A, for... and I wanted to, first of all, thank you for bringing this back and expanding on the discussion on this item. I also wanted to share a little bit about our patient population and our staff. We serve majority people of color, majority low-income folks in the community, folks who come to us for quality health care no matter what. No type of judgment where people can come and receive the care that they need where they're not receiving it anywhere else. And so it's my honor and privilege to be here to advocate for them, for our patients. It's also my privilege to advocate on behalf of our staff, who are some of the hardest working people I have ever met, to go in and day out with a type of harassment, that's the best way I can put it, that they see. And I only have a few more seconds left, but this noise ordinance language really is needed. We are having issues with hearing very loud sound, amplified sound from within our health centers. And our health center staff and our patients really don't need that. We really just want them to have to focus on receiving healthcare and providing great healthcare. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions and looking forward to next steps on how we can receive support for our patients. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Chair, I have no more.
Thank you, Candelaria, for being here and for all your team does. It's not just the staff. I mean, I'm honored to have the B Street Clinic in my district. I get emails from volunteers whose job it is to escort people to and from the clinic, talking about things they're hearing, reactions from the patients and from the staff, and it is just heartbreaking. So I want to applaud you and the team, and we're going to get moving as quickly as we can on this for sure. So Councilmember or Vice Mayor Guerra, I know you had your hand up.
Yeah, no, I just, I have a sense of urgency. My wife used to work at one of the centers as well, and just the work that the staff do, the families that are engaged, and I've known some of the clients now who, you know, have come in for support, and I can't express, again, the sense of urgency for, you know, I know we decided to wait to look at this, but I have full faith that the staff and the attorney are going to get the the language right before it comes to council. I just, again, if we allow, I'm concerned about our own bureaucracy getting in the way. Not that it's ill-intentioned or not, but it just, it happens. You know, things happen in our city governance that can slow things down. And so I'm just concerned about the delay in this ordinance. I'll just say that. That's all. And we're moving forward, but I just, again, it's, that's my frustration. So.
Well, it is a conversation for the committee, because that was our discussion at the last meeting. I think, as Angel mentioned, the ordinance has been narrowed significantly based on direction to really just be looking at healthcare facilities and really be super specific. So that, and moving more things off into the broader update that we're gonna have a whole consultant team for, right, Peter? Because that's gonna be a long, long process. So, you know, we were the ones who directed and asked for this to come back to Law and Ledge again before it came to council. I guess I wanna take a straw poll up here on the dais on if, given the super narrow scope now of what is in the ordinance language that they're working on, if we'd be comfortable, and the fact that it's been delayed again, and the fact that we're not gonna meet for another 2 weeks. Because, yeah, this does make my stomach hurt. I'm not going to lie. So I just want to pose that question because it could be direction. So go ahead, council member.
That was an alignment, like what your mm-hmm. part of my questions were, like on the narrowing of it. Is it something, if it comes to us on the 4th and we approve it, can it also be a placement for the council meeting that night if there's no changes?
I'm looking towards our city attorney and our clerk here to let us know if we think.
I'm trying to, are we within the scope of the rules to do that?
I'm seeing nods. That gives me hope. I don't know, Susanna, sorry to put you on the spot.
Our city attorney will approach the podium.
That's what happens when you show up to meetings, is we're going to ask you all the hard questions.
Usually I try to hide away in the back because both of these are very capable lawyers who could answer your questions, but this is a process question, so I don't see why not, because we would just prepare the staff report at the same time. And it was really a lot of work put into making sure you have in front of you, whether it's in this committee or the council, a legal ordinance that's not going to be tossed out by a court just because they're trying to rush through an ordinance. So, but we can certainly work towards trying to get it on the 4th simultaneously.
I mean, cool great. If it doesn't break any rules in the process, because it keeps with us moving forward.
That's excellent.
So that you can finish narrowly tailoring it. I trust our attorneys to bring us something that is legal, that we talk, so it complies with the process of coming to us, and then just moves directly onto council. We just here have to understand that if we make any changes to it, it can't go to council.
Yeah, that we'd have to pull it. That makes sense. And I want to thank you, Susanna, and your team, because I know, like, when I heard, because I called, I mean, Angel knows this, because I called and pestered, like, that next day, I was like, where's the ordinance? And he's like, you scheduled an extra meeting that week just to continue going over this ordinance. And so I do want to really appreciate, it feels like it's been a real team Herculean lift to try to get this done quickly. And our calendar at Law and Ledge is just mucking things up. So if we can do this on the same day, that would be awesome.
And I'd like to add that, you know, your city attorney is on the statewide task force, the Attorney General's task force to protect access to abortion services. I actually posed this question to my fellow members on the task force. Nobody has a noise ordinance, so that would address this. So our ordinance is going to be pretty good, and then I intend to share it with my task force members so that they can start adopting it across the state. So that's my plan. So that's why I needed to be solid.
We're doing applause around the room here, and I'm sure Planned Parenthood can help circulate that and support in those jurisdictions as well. That's wonderful.
So, I mean, are we good that if it comes back to us, so at least we see it? And then
we see it. It goes to council that night.
Still have time for our Madam Clerk to get it on the agenda for City Council, because we still got that time allowance.
That sounds okay. What do my colleagues think? That sounds like we found a good middle ground here. I see a thumbs up from the Vice Chair. Vice Mayor, thumbs up. We are in concurrence. That's what we want to do. So thank you very much for our city team for being willing to be a little unorthodox in moving this forward so that we can address the clear sense of urgency that our constituents are expressing. So thank you, Candelaria, again. Vice Mayor, I see you.
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, I mean, just a suggestion for in the future, because this item, and this is less about this issue and more about the process, but, you know, this item, in its normal scope, would have required a pass for publication. And so, you know, I just want us to balance that ability for us sometimes, like, okay, look, I know we're giving clear direction. When we have some kind of clear, at least guidance, then we can use that time when it's passed for publication to give us that window. And so, you know, it's all to say is that I think in the future, if we find ourselves in this, maybe we should have a conversation. Does pass for publication give us that comfort for this committee? Maybe it doesn't, but to be able to keep it moving forward so it doesn't get jammed up in the committee process. That's all.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think what constitutes an urgency measure, right? Because I know we communicated that really in the first meeting, is we want this to be an urgency measure so that we can move quickly. Want to thank everybody who's working on this. Was really heartened to imagine a whole second dork meeting in 1 week to try to address something that made me feel like, okay, good, I think we're all going. So thank you for all of that, and really looking forward to seeing this issue get addressed so we can provide some relief. I think at one point our staff was out there trying to help your staff install signs outside of the clinic, like, no, you can't do this. So it's we're really pulling all cylinders here. So one step at a time, teamwork. Thank you all. Sounds like we're all good for the fourth. Teamwork makes the dream work. Thank you, Coach. That's very well said. All right, so now we'll go to any public comments on items not on the agenda.
Chair, I have no hands raised in Zoom and no speakerships in chambers.
Excellent. Do I have any comments from my colleagues? All right, so we are adjourned. 1:52. No, no, it's 2:00. 3:45. 3:45. 3:45. No, don't.